Good afternoon and welcome to Forest Fires. My name is John Clark. As I enter into episode 7 of this podcast journey, I'm reminded that I've been asked a number of questions by people about how I come up with the topics and concepts for Forest Fires. And honestly, there is no fine science to it. Generally speaking, the topics come through conversations and interactions that I have with people throughout the week. Many of them come from conversations I have with my girlfriend sitting outside on the patio. Some of what I consider to be my best ideas I've stolen directly from her. Others happen because of interactions that I have with patients, situations that they're going through, problems that they may be dealing with, or successes that they may be having. I like to believe that my higher power, God as I understand it, puts things in my path throughout my week, throughout every day, that encourage me to expand my knowledge base, encourage me to grow. I personally don't believe that God, as I understand it, tests me, but I think God pushes me. And through those interactions that I have with other people, through those situations that take place every day in my life, I am encouraged to develop who I am just a little bit more. Over the past couple of months, I have been pushed well outside of my comfort zone. In the beginning of my recovery, I had to develop a new routine. Because as anybody who has suffered from alcoholism and or addiction, or who has been involved in active use of alcohol or drugs, can understand and appreciate, over a period of time, we develop a routine. And that routine, as chaotic as it may appear on the outside, was predictable. There's a certain comfort that comes in the predictability. The reality that I knew I was going to drink, and I knew that I was going to get drunk, and I knew that I was going to pass out, and I knew that I was going to have a hangover and be sick the next day, and I knew that I was likely going to have regrets, and then I would repeat the process. Even though it was hellish and chaotic, it was predictable. It's often been said that human beings have the great capacity to make a heaven out of hell and a hell out of heaven. It's quite possible for us to create order and chaos. It's quite possible for us to be comfortable in uncomfortable situations. Not because it truly is comfortable, but because it's predictable. Well, all of this got me thinking about the concept of comfort zones and how those play into recovery. You'll hear lots of mantras thrown around AA and NA rooms. Time takes time, let go and let God, one day at a time, and a lot of other things that we hear so many times that we stop listening to. It just becomes something that people say, and we don't actually think about what the meaning of it is. I do a group with some of my patients sometimes where we go through and we actually break down what the words of the Serenity Prayer mean, because we say the Serenity Prayer so often we stop listening to it. But oftentimes, there are certain phrases and words that are thrown around the 12-step rooms that are thrown around so often that people don't even necessarily know what they mean. And one of those phrases that is thrown around is comfort zone. Since probably the 1990s, the phrase comfort zone has been thrown around and it's been looked at almost negatively. The concept that to grow, you have to get outside of your comfort zone, that comfort zones are great places, but they're no place to grow. And all of these things are true. Benjamin Franklin has a great quote that says that without continual growth and progress, such words as improvement, achievement, and success have no meaning. And I think that's very true. Because there is a certain reality that we as addicts and alcoholics in recovery must abide by. And that reality is that unless we are making progress in our recovery, we are falling backwards toward a relapse. And yes, I believe there is a lot of truth to saying that nothing good, nothing long-term, nothing growth-wise happens in a comfort zone. But before we can really address the issues of a comfort zone, we have to understand that comfort zones incorporate more than just a comfort zone itself. When thinking about a comfort zone, think of a large circle. And within that circle, you've got two inner circles. The innermost circle, the smallest one, the bullseye, if you will, is the comfort zone. Now, in a comfort zone, that's where we are, by definition, comfortable. We feel safe. We feel secure. Life is predictable. And we are reluctant to leave it. It's important to understand that a comfort zone doesn't necessarily mean a good place or a good thing. Because as I said, we as alcoholics and addicts, we can become very comfortable in hellish situations. The word to really focus on in the comfort zone is predictability. Because there's one thing that we and addicts and alcoholics seem to abhor, and that is the unpredictability of life. We don't like the uncertainty that goes on with it. We want to know what tomorrow will bring, what the next drink will bring, what the next drug will bring. We want to know and have certainty. One of the problems with recovery is that as much as I can tell you that your life will most likely get better, I can't tell you with any degree of certainty what it is actually going to look like, at least not specifically. Outside of that innermost bullseye, if you will, you have another circle. And that's what's called the stretch zone or the growth zone. Now, in the stretch zone, that's where we push our envelope a little bit, where we take on risks, where we share in a meeting even though we are shy, where we interact with people that we're not accustomed to interacting with, where we engage in a new hobby or begin something that's outside of our predictable routine. Outside of that circle is the last circle, and that is the panic zone. Now, in the panic zone, we have three reactions: fight, flight, or freeze. I see all three of these reactions on rehab campuses all the time. I see them in the 12-step rooms, and I see them in the recovery community as a whole. When adverse situations present themselves to us, or possibly not even adverse situations, but different and unique situations present themselves to us, oftentimes we want to fight them. We don't like new rules, so we don't follow them. We don't like new suggestions, so we don't take them. That's a fight mechanism. The flight mechanism, where we don't like the situation that we're in because it's uncomfortable. It's outside of our quote-unquote comfort zone, so we want to run from it. AMAs are rampant in rehab campuses, and all an AMA is leaving treatment against medical advice. Your family, friends, loved ones, doctors, and people that all care for you all suggest that you stay in treatment for a specific period of time. And in those moments of fear and in panic, you say, no, I know myself better than anyone else. I'm going to leave. But the truth of the matter is, you're not leaving because you know yourself better. You're not leaving because you think you have a better idea. You're leaving because you're panicked and you're running. It's a flight mechanism. And the last is freeze, where we simply do nothing. We just sit there. We're not capable of learning. We're not capable of growing. We're capable of doing nothing. We just stop and be stagnate, and we die eventually. We simply don't have the luxury of standing still. Because as I said, when we're standing still, we're falling backwards. Now, most all of us have heard some version of a quote that says, nothing grows within a comfort zone. And I believe that is true. But I think there's more to it than a Facebook meme or a quotable piece of writing. I think we have to understand what a comfort zone is. Now, a comfort zone is a place where we have become accustomed to certain things, predictability. Many of us in our home lives have a level of comfort zone that exists there. We fold our towels in a certain way, and that's the way it needs to be. We load the dishwasher in a certain way, and that's the way it needs to be. We go through our daily habits in a certain way, and God forbid someone should come in and disrupt that. For a very long period of my time, I was the same way. There was a certain way that you load the dishwasher, and if someone came in and loaded it in a different way, it was the end of the world. If I walked in and my children had folded the towels and they'd done it in what I considered to be an incorrect way, I would immediately unfold all of the towels that they had done and fold them back the right way. Assuming, of course, that there is a right way or a wrong way. What we have to understand is that comfort zones are not always pleasurable zones. They're just places that we exist. How many of you listening know someone that has remained in a job that they hate, but they've stayed in that job because they're making too much money to quit, or the possibility of engaging in another opportunity is frightening, or it puts their stability at risk? Likewise, how many of you know someone that is in a relationship that has grown stagnant, that is not moving forward, that is not growing, but they have remained in that relationship because it's frightening to contemplate the possibility of leaving it? The chances of encountering other people, the risks associated with beginning a new relationship, the uncertainty of leaving that relationship has kept them in situations that are not growing, that have stagnated, that have become dull. Many people stay in relationships not because they like the relationship, but because they like the predictability that's associated with the relationship. Such is the case with jobs and other situations in life. For us as alcoholics and addicts, we can relate to that as well, because we stayed in active addiction not only because of the chemical dependency, which is certainly there, but because there was a certain predictability that was associated with it. Many times when I've encountered people in treatment or in the recovery rooms and they have lamented a past relationship, I ask them the simple question: do they miss the person, or do they miss the routine? If all that you miss out of a relationship is the routine, you're doing the person that you are with a disservice, and you are likewise doing yourself a disservice. We have to understand that there's nothing wrong with a comfort zone. Comfort zones are there for a reason. They are, by definition, comfortable, safe places. But comfort zones are supposed to be rest stops along the journey of life. They are not supposed to be long-term residences. We are supposed to work our way through this journey, develop ourselves, grow, learn, and then when we get to a certain place where we reach a certain threshold in our recovery, we get to a place where we can rest for a few moments at the comfort zone, look back over the successes that we have had, and applaud ourselves for a short period of time. But we also have to understand that the society that we live in is addicted to comfort. If you don't believe so, turn your television or radio on at any given point in time and pay attention to how many times comfort is advertised. We are a difficulty-adverse society. We do not like situations that are uncomfortable. Anything that is uncomfortable is unattractive. But at least in my experience, in my recovery journey, the only time that true growth happened is when I was in uncomfortable situations. Certainly, I never wanted to be disbarred. I didn't want to lose my law license. But the reality is, years before I lost my law license, I had grown dissatisfied with the practice of law and with myself in that practice of law. I was no longer growing. I was no longer developing. I had simply hit a plateau in my life. But I had a nice home, I had a nice car, and I had a family that met all of the checks and balances that I was supposed to have as a 30-something-year-old adult. And the thought of changing any of that scared me. Because what if I lost it all? What if I wasn't able to get anything better than that? What if this was the best that I could get? So I stayed in an uncomfortable situation. I stayed on that plateau until such time as my addiction and my disease stole all of that from me. In hindsight, one of the greatest days of my life was the day that I found out that I lost my law license. Now, don't get me wrong. The day that I found out that I had lost my law license was a terrifying day. I remember sitting in my car, fearful, worried, anxious, because I didn't know what the next day held. I didn't know who I was anymore because for years prior to losing my law license, for years as a lawyer, I had defined who I was by what I did. If I had introduced myself to you 6 to 8 years ago, within 2 minutes of me introducing myself, I would have probably told you that I was a lawyer. I defined myself by what I did, not who I was. So many people that I encounter in life, when they introduce themselves to me, tell me what their occupation is. To any one of you that is out there listening, I don't care what your occupation is. I don't care if you're a doctor, a lawyer, a baker, a candle maker. I don't care. You are not your job. Your job is what you do, not who you are. Who you are is defined by the choices that you make every single day. You're more than your job. You're more than a title. You're more than the letters that follow your name. You are a father, a mother, a brother, a sister, a mom, a dad, a friend. Don't limit yourself by what your occupation is. Your occupation is what gives you the ability to enjoy your life. It should not become your life. But again, we as a society, we have perverted the concept of employment and turned it into a life-defining identification. We have perverted the concept that we must work to make ends meet into believing that our work defines who we are as human beings. Such could be no further from the truth. Some of the happiest people that I have ever met in my entire life have some of the most unglorious occupations that we could put down on paper. Yet they're happy with themselves. They're able to look at themselves in the mirror. They're able to put their head down on the pillow at night without fear of the people they've hurt or they've harmed. My mother is in her late 70s. And she has been a beautician her entire life. My mother has most likely never made more than $30,000 in a year, yet she has been able to raise all of her children, own a home, build a life. But what she's able to do way beyond that is put her head down on the pillow at night without any fear that she has harmed anyone. My mother is at peace with herself, with her God, and with everyone that is around her. I can think of no better form of wealth. Cemeteries are filled with rich people and with poor people, and they're all buried 6 feet under the ground. Death is the great leveler. And at the end of the day, I can assure you that what we did in our occupation won't define who we are as people, but rather how we interacted with those that surround us. What kind of father or mother were you? What kind of friend were you? What kind of mentor were you? What kind of student were you? What kind of person were you? The comfort zones that have become so commonplace to talk about aren't necessarily bad things, but it's our ability to stay there and our inability to leave them when time has long since passed for us to go. Outside of the comfort zone is the stretch zone or the growth zone. We have to constantly, while we are existing, push ourselves to get outside of the things that make us comfortable. Because let's face it, the things that make us comfortable won't let us grow. I like sitting still and being comfortable. This weekend, some events took place in my life that threw me way outside of my comfort zone. It's actually quite a funny story, but my girlfriend and I had been contemplating taking a trip out of town, and she had stumbled across this really cute and quaint Airbnb. And she showed me pictures of the cottage and how wonderful it all looked. And I agreed, it was perfect. I had never been to Lake Michigan. I didn't even realize that there were dunes in Indiana, but this particular Airbnb was located close to the dunes and close to Lake Michigan, and the pictures were absolutely mesmerizing. And I remember in that initial conversation, we said, well, that's certainly something to look at, and beyond that, the price was great. Well, a few days later, we were sitting on the couch talking about this, and she decided that she was going to look again at this Airbnb. Now, one part of the story that I'm almost reluctant to say, but for the sake of candor, I think it's important to put out there. One of the reasons I think this Airbnb was as cheap as it was is it was located on a nudist colony. I am many things, and I have been many things in this life, but a nudist is not one of them. And initially, when she told me that, we both laughed and said, well, that's not going to happen. That's probably why it's so cheap. And we moved on with our lives. But like I said, a couple of days later, she said she wanted to just go back and look at it and see what some of the specific details were. Because, you know, maybe we could get the Airbnb, but not have to be a part of the whole nudist community, because that's just weird, right? Well, in the process of opening up this Airbnb advertisement again, she accidentally pressed the order button. And before she knew it, before I realized it, her cell phone had sent out a congratulatory ding that said we had successfully booked our Airbnb. And in that moment, we were presented with a question. Do we move forward with this uncertain, unpredictable, and crazy idea? Or do we cancel it immediately? Do we stay in our safe little haven? Do we go find us a hotel or an Airbnb at a more acceptable location? After a little bit of conversation and almost joking, we said, what the hell? Let's try it. A week later, we were on our way to Lake Michigan to a nudist colony. The drive to the nudist colony, or actually the drive to Lake Michigan, nudist colony was neither here nor there. The drive to Indiana from Nashville was roughly 7+ hours. I can assure you that during those 7 hours of travel, I was as anxious as I have ever been about anything in my entire life. The entire drive there, I was trying to come up with ways, means, schemes, thoughts, ideas, concepts of how I could get out of this, because I had agreed to do this before I had honestly thought it all out. The fear of what was to come was so overpowering to me that there were times along the trip when I honestly found myself near panic. When we pulled in to the Airbnb, we were met by a lovely lady, fully dressed, mind you, who told us that we needed to go check in at the clubhouse. Well, neither one of us wanted to check in at the clubhouse. We just wanted to go hide in our Airbnb and hopefully never come out for the entire weekend. But we had to go to the clubhouse. And as we walked to the clubhouse, we were fully dressed. The lady that had met us was fully dressed. We began to see that everybody around us, besides us three, were the opposite of fully dressed. There were body styles and shapes in every form that you can possibly imagine. And my anxiety was at an absolute breaking point. After we met with the clubhouse people and paid our fees, we went back to our cabin and we took a brief nap. And after the nap, something inside of me had changed, and I'm not quite sure what it was. Perhaps it's the same feeling that I had when I was standing outside, or standing in the open door of an airplane getting ready to skydive. I think it was the ability to embrace the unknown. Now, again, I have never been, nor will I ever be, a nudist. But for one day of my life, I was. We embraced the lifestyle for one day, and we became members of a nudist colony for less than 24 hours. But what interestingly happened at that nudist colony was a few things. One, I began to realize that the fear that I had built up over the 7 hours of that travel, of that trip, were false. I assumed that the second that I dropped trowel and walked through the nudist colony, that everybody in that place was going to stop what they were doing and stare at me. Not because I am particularly good looking or because I am particularly bad looking, but just because I didn't have any clothes on. When we took our initial walk through that nudist colony, not one person looked up. They were all engaged in their conversations. They were invested in each other and not in me. My ego took a little bit of a hit, I'm not going to lie. But as I sat there throughout the day, I began to realize that that old phrase, that fear is, there's lots of mantras in AA, lots of acronyms that you can use, but because this is a family-oriented podcast, I will only use this one. Fear stands for future events appearing real. I had created a situation in my head that I was not going to be able to endure. Now, that situation did not occur. But if we think back on our lives, that's pretty much what we do in all situations. We anticipate the worst thing that can possibly happen. And then we don't do something because of that. Mark Twain had a quote that said in his life he had feared many things, and a few of them had actually happened. And I think that's true for a lot of us. Oftentimes the fears that we create in our own mind never actually come to fruition, but what they do is they keep us from achieving any sort of growth. Likewise, while we were there at this resort, I began to realize how I had judged people based on the clothes that they wore. At this particular place, I couldn't judge people for what they wore because they weren't wearing anything. I had no idea what occupation any of those people held, and I could not put together any preconceived judgments of them. What I did, however, see were a group of people that were enjoying each other's company. And it wasn't weird. It wasn't strange. It was beautiful in a lot of ways. It was simple. It was natural. Now, don't get me wrong. I have not researched nudist colonies across the country. I am not a card-carrying member, nor will I ever be one. As I said, it was a 24-hour experience. But I can promise you that me participating in that colony activity for that weekend, my girlfriend and I joining into this lifestyle for one weekend, for one day, honestly, for a Saturday, my concepts of comfort zone were forever changed because I was thrust outside of my comfort zone. And it was very quick and easy for me to fall into my panic zone, which is oftentimes what we do. But what we as alcoholics and addicts have to do, what we have to realize is that we don't have to jump from our comfort zone into panic zone. So long as we're really willing to challenge our comfort zone just a little at a time, push ourselves into that stretch zone or into that growth zone, we begin to realize that our comfort zone begins to grow accordingly. If you would imagine your comfort zone as a balloon and you existing inside of it, when you push that balloon, you stretch it out just a little bit. But every time that you stretch that balloon, it keeps its shape. It stays stretched. And your comfort zone becomes larger and larger and larger because we begin to bring into it things that originally weren't uncomfortable to us and in some cases were worthy of panic. We live in a society that is addicted to comfort. The car that's the most comfortable, the house that's the most comfortable, the car seats with air-cooled lumbar support and steering wheels that are cooled and heated. We are adverse to discomfort. But for many of us, true growth in our life happens in those uncomfortable situations. I would not have found a career that I love but for losing a career that I thought I had to keep. I would have not fallen in love with a beautiful woman had I not lost a relationship I thought I couldn't live without. I would not have the relationship that I have with my children had I not lost so many things that I thought they needed. I thought they needed the money and the stuff, when in all actuality, they needed a present father, a man that was there, a man that was not simply a walking ATM machine, but was rather a man that would be willing to give them a hug, tell them that he was proud of them, and be present for them when they needed him. It's true. Growth doesn't happen in our comfort zone. To become who we're supposed to be, we have to push ourselves outside of that which is comfortable and that which is predictable. This is true for addicts and alcoholics, but it's also true for anyone. Because I know lots of people that are not alcoholics and addicts who remain in relationships that have long since become stagnant. But they stay there, not because they want to be there, but because they're afraid of what the future might hold if they leave. I know people who have not gone back to school to get their degree because they think they're too old. But what they really should say is that they're not too old, it's that they're too comfortable. They're too comfortable with where they are to risk the uncomfortability of what might be. As I wrap this podcast up, number one, I hope that nobody expects to find pictures of me and or my girlfriend or anything else of me on the internet at the nudist colony, because that won't happen. And if I hadn't actually put it down on this recording, I might deny it. And I still may. I don't know. But what I would encourage you to do, as opposed to looking that up on the internet, is to look at yourself. Ask yourself the hard questions. And by the hard questions, I mean this. Are you addicted to the routine of your life? The daily struggles, the rinse and repeat of your life? Are you addicted to your comfort? Have you become complacent in your recovery? Do you go to the same meetings all the time? Have you found yourself getting frustrated because you hear the same person at the meeting sharing the same story over and over again? If you are, if you have done these things, if you do find yourself in that comfort zone, I encourage you to do something to get yourself out of it. I am not suggesting that you throw yourself into the panic zone. I'm not telling you that to change your recovery, you must abandon your recovery. I'm telling you that to change your recovery, you must expand your thinking. You must push your own limits. Go to a meeting that is not traditionally one that you go to. If you're an AA member, go to an NA member meeting. If you're an NA member, go to an AA meeting. Mix it up and go to a CA meeting. If you're not in recovery at all, pick up a hobby that's completely outside of your comfort zone. If you've never been canoeing, go rent a canoe for the weekend. Rent a kayak for the weekend. Plan a skydiving trip. Do something that gets you out of your comfort zone. Because remember, whether you're actually living your life or simply existing in your life, 24 hours will pass at the exact same speed. You have to stop simply enduring your life and start living your life. But to truly live your life, you have to get out of the predictable comfort zone that you live in and find yourself in that stretch zone where growth can happen. Because for me, not everything that I have experienced in my stretch zone or in my growth zone are things that I want to do again. Like the nudist colony. But there are things that I am glad that I did, because now I can say that I've done it. I've learned something from it. I've gained something from it. You have to give yourself the chance to live. Because life doesn't happen accidentally. There aren't many people that wake up on their deathbed and say that life happened to them by accident. No. You have to go out and live your life with intention and with purpose. The doors of opportunity will eventually close if you don't do something about them. So this week, as you go about your daily tasks, I encourage you, do one thing that frightens you. Do one thing that gives you a little bit of anxiety. Do one thing that bothers you or scares you just a little bit. Push yourself outside of your zone. Because by doing so, you may reveal things about yourself that you didn't even know were there. In my recovery experience, the best relationship that I have been able to develop is the relationship that I have with myself. Because throughout my entire life, the one person that I did not want to learn about, the one subject I failed at every time, was me. In the stretch zone, you will learn about you. And for many of us, it's an introduction that's years too late in the making. But as with my own recovery, better late than never. Thank you guys for tuning in to Forest Fires. I look forward to continue to do these things with you. As always, thank you so much for the support, for the encouragement, for the ideas, for the challenges. Thank you guys for pushing me outside of my comfort zone. I have a friend of mine in the recovery community. When I was first getting started with this, when I first had the idea of doing the podcast, I had this idea and it rolled around for months and months and months and nothing ever came with it. This gentleman goes by the name of Tommy. It's Tommy P. And Tommy knows exactly who he is, and when he hears this, he'll know who he is. But Tommy said, "John, you're really good at giving suggestions, but if you're not willing to take your own suggestions, are you even worthy of giving those suggestions?" And that struck me like an arrow. If I'm going to encourage you guys to get outside of your comfort zone, by God, I got to keep doing it myself. So thank you for pushing me outside of my comfort zone. Thank you for helping me grow. Thank you for listening.